This morning I'm going to get right to the scripture because this story from the Gospel of Luke is a long one. And I'm going to divide it into several parts. Start at the beginning. Now on that same day, and that day is Easter morning. It's Sunday morning. On that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you are walking along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" Jesus asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that Jesus was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women said, but they did not see him." This story right here, that I just read you the first part of, is a favorite of many theologians and people of faith. We refer to it just as the road to Emmaus or the walk to Emmaus. Two disciples of Jesus, one named Cleopas and the other unnamed. And I want to add here that I like Walter Wangren's interpretation. He says that it was Cleopas and his daughter that were walking along this road. And I love that because it brings the women into the story. So let's say Cleopas and his daughter are walking home from Jerusalem on the first day of the week, what we know as Easter or Resurrection Sunday. Now remember, we've had the luxury of 2,000 years to fine-tune our stories and interpretations about all the events surrounding Easter. But for these two walking along, things are happening at a fast and furious pace, and they're not certain of anything. So they're walking along the road, and a stranger drops into step with them and asks what they're talking about. Cleopas's response is quick and pretty cutting. "Are you the only person within 100 miles of Jerusalem who doesn't know what's going on? Don't you know that Jesus, who was a mighty prophet of God and who we thought was going to save us, save Israel, was handed over to the chief priest who handed him over to the Roman authorities, and now he's been crucified, and it's been 3 days since we saw him killed? And we thought he was the one." Now, regardless of your own understanding of who Jesus is or was, put yourself in the sandals of these two walking the Emmaus Road. They're described as disciples of Jesus. It's likely that they've been publicly following Jesus and publicly sharing his teachings and testifying to miracles of healing that they've seen him do. They likely have shared activities with him that have, at least on the surface, broken all the rules of their Jewish religion. They likely have made it onto some kind of Jesus follower list, which means that they're no longer counted as members of the Jewish faith family. There are probably influential people in their hometowns and especially in their home synagogues who believe their Jesus following has corrupted them and marked them as sinners and blasphemers. And they've made some serious sacrifices to follow Jesus. And now it appears all for naught. Jesus is dead and buried. Dead and buried. And they thought he was the one, and he wasn't. And now all their hopes and dreams that he was who he said he was, God's chosen, their brother, all that's gone. Dead. And they're kind of feeling like they may as well be dead too. They had one glimmer of hope. Some women in their group went early that morning to Jesus' tomb to dress his body. And they say his body was not there. And the angels appeared to them and told them Jesus was alive. Some others then ran to the tomb and found that, yes, it was empty, no body. But they didn't see Jesus. There was no proof he was alive. Now, let me stop there because this is critical. This is what I need you to understand. The history of Christianity, honestly, the history of the world, when you consider what Christianity has wrought, both good and bad, the history of the world depended on what happened next. Because these weren't the only two people feeling this way. Believing Jesus had deceived them, was not the child of God, was not come to earth to indicate once and for all how very much God desired to be in relationship with God's people. These were two of hundreds. If Jesus was dead, nothing would change. The corrupt powers would stay the same. There would be nothing to do but wait again. Oh, if only they had had at their disposal what we have. Ring cameras. DNA testing. Forensic experts. And CSI Jerusalem. It would have been so simple for them then. So simple to prove that Jesus was not dead, that he was resurrected. So easy to believe he was who he said he was, and the world was about to change big time. Now, I'm not an expert in crime scene reconstruction, but I did a lot of research this week so that I could provide the evidence that Cleopas and his companions so badly needed. I've got facts and rationales and theories that can make your head spin. I've got expert witnesses and behaviorists and psychologists and forensic experts, enough to knock your socks off. When I'm through, it still won't be enough. I can't convince you. Maybe even Jesus couldn't convince you. Not if we believe this story about the road to Emmaus. Here's the second part of the story. Jesus is walking with these two. Then Jesus said to Cleopas and the other disciple, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures." As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going to go on, but they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over." They didn't invite him to stay because his story was fascinating. They didn't invite him to stay because he was providing the evidence they needed to believe that Jesus was not dead. Jesus had presented all the scriptural evidence, and it wasn't enough. They invited him in because that's what you did, rather than sending a lone and therefore vulnerable traveler out into the night. He had laid out the whole scriptural case, and it wasn't enough. Thank goodness there's more. He went in with them. Picking back up in the gospel, when he was at the table with them, when Jesus was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. And then their eyes were open and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" And that same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 disciples and their companions gathered together, and they were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon." And then Cleopas told them what had happened on the road and how Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. Jesus, it seems, was very much alive. Recognized by those who knew and loved him, recognized in the simple, in the personal, in the ritual, in the breaking of the bread. Now, did this really happen? This story about Cleopas and the other disciple, did any of the appearance stories of Jesus actually happen? Did Jesus' spirit re-enter his miraculously healed body? No longer broken and bleeding. Is that why people who had known him didn't recognize him? Did a new body materialize as the old one disintegrated, sort of like Spock and Kirk on the U.S. Enterprise? I don't know. I do know, though, with all my heart, that Jesus' presence, spirit, life, wisdom, did not end with his death. He was resurrected. And it matters very much that Jesus was resurrected, because here's what you have to remember. Guys like Jesus were a dime a dozen, really. Other prophets, other messiahs came and went in Jesus' day. Routinely, they died violently at the hands of the pagan enemy. And what happened when they died? Their movements died with them. Their movements died with them, often literally. In best case scenarios, the movements they had founded transformed themselves into a new movement around a new leader. Jesus' movement didn't either. Within days of his execution, it found a new lease on life. Within weeks, it was announcing that he was indeed the Messiah. Within a year or two, it was proclaiming him to pagans as the rightful Lord. If Jesus was not resurrected, you wouldn't know his name to state that you believe in him. If Jesus wasn't resurrected, his obscure life would not be the subject of the greatest number of volumes ever printed. If Jesus was not resurrected, you would not be in a Christian church attempting somehow to be a follower of Christ. If Jesus wasn't resurrected, he's dead. And then you got a problem. If Jesus is dead, in whom do you really believe? An impassioned teacher, yes, but also an impassioned teacher who claimed to be God. Not once, but over and over. And if he's dead, once and for all dead, I ask again, in whom do you believe? Something big happened at Easter. N. Thomas Wright and Marcus Borg, two theologians, during their long careers, worked at different ends of the theological spectrum. They wrote a book together called The Meaning of Jesus, in which they took the events of Jesus' life, including his death and resurrection, and argued their beliefs about it. Wright argued from a conservative viewpoint, Borg very liberal. And Thomas Wright basically believes that if we had had a camera at the tomb, we would have seen Jesus' body come forth. Borg says no, that never happened. And they wrote about it. And of the resurrection, Borg said this: "We both affirm the resurrection of Jesus and see it as central to the New Testament, but we understand the historical events behind this differently. My position," and this is Borg, the progressive, the liberal voice, "my position is that experiences of the risen Christ as a continuing presence generated the claim that Jesus lives and is Lord." In other words, Borg believes that as people continue to experience their hearts burning within them, as people continue to have their hearts burning with them and to experience the presence and inspiration of Christ, when they felt it and experienced it in the sharing of the grape and grain, they began to work on that. They began to try to come up with words for it. And their words became a story. Jesus is not dead. I feel it. I experience him. God raised Jesus from the dead. Thomas Wright's position is that the fact of the empty tomb and appearances of a post-Easter Jesus generated that claim, Jesus lives and is Lord. But both of these theologians coming from opposite directions believe that Jesus is not dead, that Jesus has been resurrected. Physical resurrection, I'm not certain. Resurrection, definitely. How do we know that Jesus succeeded in ushering in a new era? How do we know that death could not hold him? We know in part, like when a story like the one that we read this morning turns into a phenomenon of spiritual awakening. Did you know that even today you can sign up for your own Emmaus walk? You can spend 72 hours with like-minded disciples in intense prayer and song and reflection and listening. The walk to Emmaus is a spiritual walk, not a physical walk. If Jesus is not resurrected, there is no Emmaus walk. Believing in the resurrected Christ makes it easy for people to understand that it is more blessed to give than to receive, and motivates them to share the world's resources with others rather than to stockpile everything. The presence of the resurrected Christ accompanies you to the communion table, where you share the bread and the cup with people who are nothing like you on the outside. Understanding Christ as risen, resurrected, alive, and important draws us together. If Jesus is not resurrected, if people didn't begin to have experiences with some risen Christ, with their hearts burning within them, with recognizing Jesus in the bread and the communion, if Jesus is not resurrected, the post-Easter Jesus, then the God of Israel loses and the God of Rome wins. Hedonism and capriciousness and small-minded, created in a human's image, pseudo-dignity deities win. But they didn't. The resurrection of Jesus ushers in a new world order. Now, from that moment, now to this moment, when we remember and celebrate that moment. It was belief in the resurrected Jesus that got MLK up in the pulpit, up in front of the cameras, up on his feet for march after march, and down on his knees in his kitchen when he wanted to give it all up. But the resurrected Christ appeared to him. For Mother Teresa, it was the risen Christ who beckoned her to India. These people in this story, it wasn't the facts. It wasn't the scriptures. It wasn't even the women's stories. It was their own experience with a risen Christ that they saw revealed in the breaking of the bread, the thing we do every time we worship together. They thought he was the one. By the end, they knew he was. Amen.